Hello, it's Brody. I love bringing mummification to you each week, and if you'd like to support me to keep doing that, you can make a once-off donation through the Acast supporter feature. There's no regular subscription, and your donation will help pay our music license, buy audio gear, and put fuel in my car so I can keep interviewing the amazing women who share their stories with us. There's a link in the show description and episode show notes.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Mummification. I'm your host, Brody Matner. This podcast is a space for women and parents to talk about how they're feeling. And sometimes they feel like swearing. So this episode may not be suitable for young ears. Hello. Before we get into this episode, and it's a really good one, I just wanted to say for anyone who had listened to the last episode where Leith and I chat about me going back to work and him being a stay-at-home dad, I just wanted to clarify that I'm not finishing up the podcast. I'm going to keep going with the podcast because I love it so much and I get so much joy and knowledge and fulfillment out of it. I think it is the most, second to trying to be an awesome mum and partner and friend and person. It is the most fulfilling thing I've ever done. So thank you to everyone who has come on so far and to everyone who's going to come on in the future. And a massive thank you to everyone who listens. But at the end of the chat that Leith and I had, I was very early on in our decision-making process and I was a little bit doomsday. And so I think at the end I said, well, mummification's dead, that's it. But I've calmed down and it's not. So we carry on.
Well, that was really quite tepid for me. I'm like, burn my mouth, burn it.
All right, let's.
Hello.
So I met Christy Jones, I call her KJ, in 2004 on a Kentucky tour of Spain. And since then I have watched from afar as she has moved from Brisbane to Canada to Sydney to Hong Kong to New York and back to Brisbane.
Wow.
Now I did have, she's the Asia Pacific Marketing Director for a US software company, but that is no longer correct. Or is it?
It is no longer correct.
What should I say?
Head of marketing for a US company.
Okay.
It's close.
Close. So she's head of marketing for a US company and mummy to nearly two-year-old Edie. So initially I wanted you to come on and chat about being a single mum, but then we spoke on the phone and we spoke for about 2 hours and I thought, oh, we have a fair bit to cover. So I think what we'll do, we'll see how today goes, but the plan was that we would chop you into two parts. Mm-hmm. So we'll just see how far we get.
I hope not.
Today. Well, not all chop your story into two parts. So we'll just see how far we get. But it was going to be up until Edie / Escape from New York.
Yes.
And then the Edie chapter.
Yep.
So thanks for coming on.
Hi.
Hi.
I love doing this in person.
I know, it's so nice.
Super exciting.
We thought we were going to be remote, but you're down here for the Grand Prix.
Yes.
You're not really here for the Grand Prix.
The what?
I'll start with our first question.
Mm.
If you were stuck on a desert island and you could take a meal, a drink, and a personal item, what would they be?
I do remember this being prep. I totally didn't have answers. I'm not really good at like picking specific favourite things. A meal, though, and the desert island, look, I think it'd have to be just like beautiful, fresh prawns.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I just think, and they're just everything you need.
Yes.
That's what you eat, one thing for the rest of your life?
Prawns. Cold prawns.
Yep. What was the second one?
A drink.
Oh, champagne.
I was going to say, surely you're going to go a champagne with your prawns.
Literal preferred alternative to water if it could be.
And a personal item.
Mm. A personal item. I think I'm going to say phone because it's like it's your gateway to your world. Not that I like live on my phone. Mm. I actually don't very much, but it like brings your world closer to you.
Yes.
And so if I was to be on that desert island, I'd love like something that could keep me access to the thing, the people that I love, you know, like communication. So I'm not
you can FaceTime
maybe. I'm not talking to like Wilson and starting fires.
Talk to real people. So I like to call this first bit Escape from New York, but you relocated back to Brisbane from New York when you were a zillion weeks pregnant, 30 to be exact.
31 and a half, nearly 32, yeah.
Because COVID hit.
Yeah.
Do you want to start there and work our way backwards, or do you want to go way back and talk a bit about your accident in Canada and what that then meant? Or where do we want to start?
Start with New York.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're in New York. You're a zillion weeks pregnant.
Yeah.
What was your plan?
I mean, it almost takes telling like the whole New York story, I think. Like,
hit me.
I arrive in New York and New York happened because it was like, hey, here's this opportunity. Would you like to move to New York for it? Who says no?
No one says
literally
no.
No one says no to that. And so I didn't like seek out in my life, I want to move to New York one day. And I, you know, built my life plan to be around that dream. It was an awesome opportunity and I took it. And so I land there and I knew in the background I wasn't well, but I, you know, ignored it because you're moving countries and you're having fun and you're like exploring a new country and a new place and starting a new job. But then, you know, lo and behold, the journey of the next I was there for 3.5 years, but over the course of a couple of years, life just completely changed and I chose to do something I really never thought I would do, which is have a baby independently. From a man or, you know, any co-parenting situation. And then it all just happened because I can tell that story separately. So here I find myself like, what am I going to do with my life? Well, I thought I was going to have a baby living in New York. My mum, who I'm really close to, was going to come out and be there with me through the birth and recovery.
Because you were going to have a cesarean.
Knew I was going to have a cesarean at about, we started talking at about 27 weeks or maybe 25 weeks, somewhere around that mark, for various reasons. And then it turns out she was Frank Breech, so it was
there, in the end, there was absolutely no other choice. But, you know, sort of knew it was on the cards, and I just wanted my mum to be part of that process as well, as having a birth partner. So we arranged that, you know, she's going to come over for 89 days and have that, you know, sort of time with me. And then I was going to spend a couple more months of my mat leave in New York enjoying, you know, the rest of summer and autumn, fall, and then have a couple months over Christmas back in Australia and head back. And, you know, baby was going to go to childcare, and I was going to continue living where I was living and continue in the job and raise her in her infant years, at least, you know, as a little subway baby, you know, as a little New Yorker who probably would have a level of toughness and grit and resilience about them that maybe other kids in the world don't necessarily have. And yeah, just keep enjoying that life. I wasn't ready to, just because I got pregnant, leave where I was living. Mm. But then February, March hit.
And we all got COVID. So that was the plan. And then COVID hit. And how did that change things?
COVID was brewing. And as we live with it now in a way that we didn't 2 years ago.
Mm.
And at that point in time, we have to remind ourselves sometimes it was scary.
Yeah.
And 24 hours was about a week's worth of events, you know, like every day you'd wake up and the situation would have been so much more daunting and ever-changing, and hour to hour was on some days it was hour to hour. Mm. And the city was going through quite a shock and its own sort of thing. Therefore, and all New Yorkers were as well. And then on a personal level, my pregnancy was getting worse and worse. So, you know, I'd just had 2 trips to hospital, one in February and one in mid-March, one via ambulance because I had a respiratory problem in which I could not breathe, and I was coughing relentlessly. Did I have COVID? I don't know, because the Department of Health wouldn't test people.
That is so, what was the criteria for testing?
ICU.
Wow. Mm. So you're heavily pregnant and you've gone to hospital in an ambulance because you've got respiratory issues, and they're like, don't need to test you.
Yeah, no, there was no testing.
It's obscene.
Isn't it? When we look back, it's like, what? So I was in this special like COVID wing, and at this point as well, like the fact that you've got nurses doing fresh PPE every visit and every patient, and you're separated by curtains, and we didn't even know masks. Like, I had a mask and they're like, here's your mask. But like, I took it off to have some water.
Yeah.
I took it off to like wipe the sweat away. You didn't necessarily think of it as the same way you do now.
Mm.
So, you know, full of a whole ward full of people with COVID all around me. It was a bizarre and scary day.
And then when did you decide that you needed to come back because your mum couldn't go to you?
I can't remember the timeline, whether at this point of the second hospital visit we knew she wasn't coming or not. Mm. I think at this point it was like she wasn't going to be there, so I was going to have a friend as a birth partner. And then about a week later, throughout that week, I actually had started to get a lot better.
Mm.
But every day was a massively escalating situation.
Mm.
And we're already in lockdown. And I had just got diagnosed with gestational diabetes. And because I had been so unwell, getting all the way to the pharmacy, you know, just a couple of blocks away was a lot for me. And the more than I had done. So I was relying on my network to do things. They'd already been getting my groceries and all those sorts of things. But we'd gotten to the point where my network wasn't there because they had left. They had had exposure, so we're in isolation. They mostly left. Like, people just fled the city. And so here I was finding it challenging to get my supplies that I needed to start measuring insulin from the pharmacy. Something, a menial task. And it was quite surreal. Like, I found one glove in the house, and there was no masks available anywhere. So I had like this big scarf wrapped around me, and like went out, got the stuff. And I was like, how can I have a baby and probably have it via cesarean and recover from that? Not just the physical, but the emotional process. This is meant to be a really happy time of life. You're meant to be like, oh my God, I've just brought this life into the world and it's my child, and you want to feel the good feels. And at that moment, it was none of that. It was pure, it was literally pure fear. And so I had a very restless night and a very concerning night and a few conversations with my parents, and woke up the next day still not cognitively realizing I have to leave, but also just feeling a huge amount of fear and unknown. I was almost a bit frozen, I think. And also was really still like, it was actually my boss who was the first one to say to me 2 weeks prior, you need to go home. You need to get out of there. And I was like, I can't leave. Like, I'm so pregnant. And how? And I was just like, that was the most absurd thing I'd ever heard. and then woke up really early the next day and started chatting to my parents. And my dad was like, right, spent the day doing a lot of research, talking to my doctor friends. You're coming home, and I do not want to hear two words about it. And, you know, like, definitely play that father protector role. He came in pretty hard and was like, I don't want to hear another word about it, kind of
get
thing.
Get on the train, Christy.
Yeah, but it was what I needed to hear, and didn't take any convincing, because I actually knew in deep down that that's what I needed to do. And so I spent... I think that was like a Saturday morning or something. Spent that weekend packing up my apartment in a way that was like an 8-month-old woman shuffling boxes around, kicking them, and packing a couple of suitcases and getting rid of food and my dear old plants and all those things, and booking a flight, a $16,000 one way. Flatbed, thank you very much. Yeah, oh. I mean, you did what you gotta do.
Yeah.
You just did it. And then I I went to the doctor and got my clearance on the Monday morning. I had lots of conversations with my medical team, and they had obviously I had already been through quite a situation. I had already possibly had COVID, or maybe I didn't, maybe whatever, but the fact of the matter is I'd already been very sick. And I had a complex pregnancy, and the doctor, when I like rang to talk about it on the Saturday, said to me, the thing that you need to remember is we don't know what the government or anyone is going to do. And if you get COVID, your baby or you or your baby, you can get separated. There's no one else. If you get COVID and you end up in an isolated ward, your baby is going to the state. And from that moment, I didn't need to hear anymore. There's nothing left in me that had hesitation or concern about, am I doing the right thing? It was a very single track. This is what I need to do. I got very practical. So then on the Monday when the practice reopened, I went in and we had more discussions and physical check and got my medical clearance, and my doctor looked me in the eye and said, get the hell out of here now. And she was a very lovely but practical kind of doctor. You know, she was quite pragmatic, but she was also a very caring individual. And the look of fear and stress that she wore on her face is something I don't think many of us have seen in our lives. And I just knew, of course. So, you know, 48 hours later, I was back in Australia. And it was a really, really tough and scary and eerie and weird process. But it's also when the most kindness comes out. Mm. I've so many little tales of people being just so kind, and like everyone came together in that moment, especially that's what New Yorkers do. But it was really very, very, in a weird way, special time of life, because even though I had so much fear, I felt so supported.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because didn't you just hand your keys to a friend?
I didn't even. I just locked the door and left. And we thought it was going to be like I did leave a spare key with my neighbour, my friends who lived around the corner, and we all thought, oh, about 4 to 6 weeks from now, one of my friends will come in and sort out the stuff and, you know, deal with all the different boxes I'd labelled recycling and charity clothes and all that kind of stuff. But no, what ended up happening was my landlord wouldn't let me pay a dime more and came in, unlocked and watched the packers' every move and made sure that the removalists did their good job, and my stuff was on a boat on its way home. As a side note, my landlord is the mafia.
I love that. The real deal. But a very kind
mafioso. He just loved Australians.
Oh, thank God. So shall we talk about, I mean, that's so full on. It's such a huge pivot, an unexpected pivot. But shall we talk about what led you up to the decision of having a baby?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you're having, you've got stage four endo.
Mm-hmm.
And you were having treatment for that, is that right?
Yeah, so arriving in New York, I knew I wasn't well, but I didn't really, like I hadn't really acknowledged it was probably going to be endo. I'd already had a surgery back in Australia a number of years prior, and part of me thought it could be back, but I didn't really want to deal with it. But I did a couple of months after arriving, and then had quite a big surgery. And off the back of that, realizing, I think at that point I must have been about 34.
Mm.
And had been living there a couple of years, and I just didn't see myself, I think, finding a guy in the kind of way that would then mean I'd want to have a baby with you in a quick kind of way. Like, I just decoupled my thinking that in order for me to be a mother, it had to be because I'd found the guy I want to spend my life with.
Mm.
And so with these two things colliding, like my fertility was starting to have an expiration date to it.
Yeah.
That you like to not think about, but is a very reality. It's a reality for every woman, but it was a earlier reality for me than I thought it was going to be. And then,
because of your endo.
Because of my endo, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I remember speaking to my fertility gynae, and at first it was like, well, a couple of months after the surgery, it was like, you need to get some eggs out. Like, that's step one, is freeze your eggs. And then throughout that egg freezing process, I was like, I actually think that I might go all the way here. She's like, that's the smartest thing I think you've ever said. And because you get to know someone pretty well throughout it. So it was that, and then it was like, I guess, some practicalities. You can't just go and do such an enormous thing if you haven't been planning for it or thinking about it or, I don't know, like it's not an accessible thing to everyone. So in my mind, IVF and having a baby independently was just going to be this a financial level that I would never have thought was accessible to me as one income and all that kind of stuff with, you know, cost of living, etc. And then, yeah, a few different things happened. I realized that my work provided insurance for fertility. I knew that there was a great parental leave program, and that as an Australian, I wanted to have more than 3 months off work.
Yeah, because they
so short, the parental leave policy. There. So I had a great parental leave policy where I worked, and I was like, I didn't realize, like, oh, hang on, finances aren't going to be a barrier. Okay. Oh, geez. all right, well, let's start thinking seriously about this. So then I started doing more research, and I spent somewhere in the vicinity of 6 months really thinking about it. And
while you were thinking about it, were you going through
egg freezing? Exactly. Yep. And, you know, in that time, I think we had a Christmas happen. So I would come back to Australia and see my friends and family and be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. And everyone was just, I had nothing but overwhelming support. And like, that's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And so akin to every decision I make in life, I probably internally ponder it for a very long time. But once I make my decision, it is so made. I don't waver once I've made it. I spend the time quietly mulling myself and coming to that process, but I rarely go back on a decision. And this was no different. And so then it moved from deciding it to then, well, you've got to learn so much. It's an educational process as well. So it was, how do I practically do this in terms of the how do I get pregnant part, like that. Like, IVF is scientific and you're like, oh my God, yeah, I remember year 11 biology, and you have to like really learn a lot. You have to learn like in a essentially entirely different medical system to one that I was used to. So you're learning that as well, and access to how you get donors and that whole selection process and everything. And then I also spoke to a couple of people I knew who'd done it. Not necessarily in a donor way, but a colleague was a single mum who knew her donor, and you know, I spent some time talking to others about what their experience was, and but not zero time on the internet researching.
That's probably
literally zero. I'm not a blog person, and I don't need someone else to like share their experience to help inform my decision making.
Yes.
So I steered clear of any of that. And then it wasn't like one day I woke up and be like, woo,
I'm gonna have a baby.
Yeah. It was an evolving situation of like your runway's running out to have a baby. And I, as a woman in her mid-30s, obviously the question of how motherhood starts to get a bit more realistic. And people who know me will also absolutely agree, at no point in my life have I stopped to be like, do I want to be a mum? Like, is that something I want out of my life? It's just for me, and always, of course I do, an innate like sense of wanting motherhood and wanting to be in a mother role was a bit of a, of course I do. So I didn't actually need to either stop and be like, if I did continue in life as I am and end up not having a child, would I be happy? And it was like, well, no, because I want to be a mother. Mm. So that was also part of the, I'll go and make it happen.
And how did you always know that you wanted to use donor sperm, or was there a moment where you were like, oh, maybe I'd ask someone I knew?
So I had a couple of male friends actually be like, I'd do that for you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And I was like, that's the loveliest thing, but I wanted anonymity.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone does it their way.
Yeah.
And for me, having a detached scenario was my preferred option.
And what does that process look like? Like, are you handed a folder?
It's so funny. It is. I've actually never done, you know, the pre-app online dating. But it's exactly how I envisage it would have been. It's like, you know, the old RSVP.com.
Yes.
So you've got, you log in, you get your username and credentials, and it's literally going through a menu, a bit like what you said, like a folder of options. And it's like any database. You pick your fields and your search criteria, and you look at physicality, you look at medical components. You've got to go making sure that also the genealogy matches up, like your, not genealogy, your genetic composition between the two specimens is healthy. So you go through genetic testing as the individual, which then reveals you may be a carrier of something and something and something. So you don't want to also have a carrier of those things. So there might be medical reasons why you need to choose a certain type of donation. You can think about heritage. You can think about occupations and intellect and personality. And it's actually extraordinary. And even you get a voice, like you hear their voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You hear their voice and you see three childhood pictures of like very, very young baby, toddler kind of stuff. And so there's thousands as well.
It's incredible.
This is just from one sperm bank as well.
And so you don't see adult pictures of them in case you walk by them on the
street.
There's
different levels of anonymity that the donor subscribes to. So they choose right from the outset, do I want to be open with my identity? It's not advertised on the platform, but if you purchase and enter into an agreement, then you can find out who that person is, and you can see some adult pictures. You can do it so that at the point in time that the donor gives their donation, they also agree that in 18 years from the offspring being born, that the offspring can go to the agency and their identity is revealed. So essentially, you might be a donor and 20 odd years from when you give the donation, your identity is revealed to the offspring, and you make that decision you've made that decision however many years, decades prior.
And what was the...
And then there's the third level of anonymity is like none. And if you, as the offspring, turn 18, you can contact the agency. The agency can ask the donor, do you want your identity revealed in a line of communication opened up or don't you? And at which point they make the decision. And that's the one that Edie has.
Yep. That's so interesting.
Mm.
What an awesome process.
It's the US process, which is quite different to the Australia process.
Oh, right.
So, again, like I had no clue of really the Australia process, and I don't actually have that much knowledge of it. Mm. But America, the land of... if you can pay for it, you can get it. So where there's a will, there's a way over there. And it's very, very horses for courses. You do you and I'll do me.
Mm.
And then we can all be happy. And that's a great aspect to America.
Yeah.
And so you don't have the same amount of regulation over, donated tissue. Yep. That you do in Australia. And so you just pay your fee and off you trot. Yeah.
It's just fascinating. Like, I think it's so cool that option is there and there's so much in it.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually, it was very, overwhelming.
Yeah,
it was very overwhelming, and I remember it was Super Bowl, which is early February.
Yeah.
And I was obviously had moved past the decision process and was now researching who I would choose. And you can imagine it can take you 15 minutes of researching one individual to then realize, oh, that's a deal breaker. Or and what are, and you don't even really at the beginning know all your deal breakers, but at some point going through the process, you end up,
something comes up.
Yeah.
And you go, oh no.
Yeah, exactly. And so the hours that, and I would spend them in really dedicated kind of blocks. It was for me like not something you checked like you checked your Instagram. So have a bit of a scroll on Tinder, swipe it or whatever.
Don't a swipe right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd have these sessions where I'd like, you know, do a lot of research. And anyway, Super Bowl came and I went to a Super Bowl party, and obviously you have a few drinks at those. And I think I must have had just come off the back of a couple of days of research over a weekend or something. And I remember phoning my parents. I think I was like, who's going to pick up? It was the middle of the day here. So my dad happened to pick up. And I think it was in some ways a good thing that my dad, not my mum, picked up. He has moments of sage advice. And he, you know, I was like a few champagnes under, like going on, rabbiting on and on and on about like, how do I choose? How do I make this choice? I felt a little crippled by the options. And how do I know? Like, for me, it was like almost that donor selection process was another landmark in the experience of, am I doing the right thing? How, what's the nature versus nurture in this? Like, what if I choose wrong? What if I make the wrong choice here? And you put a, you really put so much pressure on yourself.
Well, it's probably more knowledge and research than a lot of people do if they're having a baby with a partner, boyfriend, one night stand, friend, whatever, whoever.
It is infinitely more.
Like, I didn't do that kind of,
right?
Leith and I didn't get gene tested before, right? We had kids.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it, that's a,
it just come, it just gets, yeah, it literally just got that word, overwhelming.
Mm.
And that then put a sense of pressure on me, because yeah, like you're making a big decision, and then it's like, and if I make the wrong one here, how will I know?
Mm.
But you don't know that when you're meeting a guy anyways.
No.
Whether it's a genetic thing that happens, or whether for whatever reason the man or the woman that you were with didn't turn out to be like what you expected.
Who you thought they were.
Yeah. So we had this really big conversation, and there was this one donor that just kept, I guess, staying in my mind. Like, I'd always come back to him in my mind, and my dad was just like, well, look, at the end of the day, you're the parent, not them. There are means to parenthood, but they're not the parent, and you are, and what you do as a parent is going to be what makes this child's life. And so in some ways you just got to pick. You just got to make a decision and take the pressure off the science of it and move more to the love of it, like, yeah, the all the good parenthood things that you're going to do.
Yeah.
And that's where the nurture started to be like, well, nature is a means to this, but a nurture is what really is going to make, yes, who she is. Well, at that point, yes, the baby. Mm.
Because I imagine there isn't a right answer.
There's literally not.
There's not the perfect,
no,
donor.
No.
And so,
and then what gets even weirder is, okay, yeah, okay, I'm going to go him. And then I go to, like, you have to have your doctor check. So you get the ID and you, like, go through a little bit of administration just to make sure. Because they want to make sure that from the scientific perspective that everything's covered off. The genetics, and then they're like, okay, well, go ahead. So and how many vials you need, and you go through sort of like a bit of admin on that. And then, get this, add to cart.
No.
Literally, you get to this section of the portal, which is like, add to cart. I couldn't. For me, I was like, maybe it's my generation, or I don't even know, but I cannot add to cart like
my the child.
It is a bit. It was a bit. So I rang the guy. I rang the, you know, customer support line, and I told him. He's like, yeah. I get it. I get it. So we did the old, and my credit card digits.
And so he added to cart for
yes.
you.
Yes. Yeah. Had a bit of a chuckle at that one. And then goes from, gets shipped from California to New York, and then it gets swizzled up and, yeah, you go through IVF and then you which is a whole other chapter, but yeah.
And then you get pregnant.
Yeah. Hopefully. Hopefully.
Wow.
Other important, I think, part of the conversation is like my openness about all this with ED. Like,
yes, I was going
to. Yeah. We already read IVF books about how mummy went to the bank of hopes and dreams.
Oh. Because do you think that it's going to be. Well, clearly you do think that it's going to be easier if that is, if the whole truth of the story is told to her from the word go.
Absolutely.
So there's not a, you're six now.
Yeah.
You know, where's, who's dad?
No way. It's already her normal. She's obsessed with this Cocomelon show, which every child
I've
is.
Avoided it. I'm like the plague, so, but please I know don't.
It's so conventional and conservative, but she is so addicted to the songs. She absolutely loves that show. Coco. Anyway, she just there's a mummy and there's a daddy. And so we were playing this memory game, which is the, you know, the cards of Cocomelon characters. Of course. And she, you know, always does the baby first, then the mummy, then the daddy, then the brother and sister. And it's moments like that, you know, there's the daddy. So, you know, she's saying daddy.
Yeah.
Edie have a daddy?
No.
And then, you know, what does Edie have? Pa. And, you know, lists off all these other people. And so I remember when she was just past one and starting to talk, and she was swinging about in my bathroom, you know, playing around in the cabinets, and she's like talking to herself, and she's like, "Mummy, Edie, yeah, daddy, no." It's like she sees dads, and she doesn't have one, and it's her normalization of her life and her construct. And so, why keep something a secret when it's just her normal?
Well, it's her life.
It would be sad if it was a secret, and it would be weird.
Well,
it would be confusing.
Well, and if it's a secret, it makes it sound like there's something wrong with it.
Exactly. You
know, oh, it's a secret. We won't tell anybody.
Yeah. My one non-negotiable on, so everyone is very curious about the process of acquiring sperm and doing it this way.
Yeah.
And I love to inform people about it because it is a type of motherhood that maybe not everyone's had exposure to.
Yeah.
So it's just, hey, we're all learning about different families here, so I'm happy to share. But what I, from the very get-go, absolutely refused to talk about are the characteristics of the donor, because it's not fair to ED to have other people know aspects about him before even she's had the opportunity to learn those things. What he might do for an occupation, what he might have looked like.
Yeah.
I honestly, I haven't even gone back to it since that add to cart moment. I've literally not opened any of the information since.
Do you have it?
Going back to the made the decision.
I made the decision.
But I have it all on like USB and a whole bunch of
And
stuff.
So one day she can sit down and read it or whatever.
Yeah, or yeah. not. Up yeah. to her. But, you know, it's her information before it's anyone else's.
Yeah, which is so respectful and amazing of you, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Got to remember that's like this is that
she's a person. A
yeah, yeah. This is her, the way that she's come into this world.
Mm.
As gorgeous and cute as she is.
So cute. Yeah, bring her with next time.
Yeah, I know.
We could have a play date.
Yeah.
Her and June can run around. Marley can stand there and watch them.
That's what she does.
Oh. I'll just watch.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then I don't know how this is going to become a half an hour podcast, but anyway.
It doesn't need to be half an hour.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. Thank you so much, KJ, for sharing part one of your incredible story. We will have part two for you very shortly. There are links in the show notes to learn more about sperm donation in both Australia and America, as well as endometriosis and IVF. Mummification is produced and hosted by me, Brody Matner. Our beautiful music is composed by Ben Talbot Dunn. If you're enjoying the show, please rate, review and subscribe. You'll be notified when a new episode is released and it helps us reach new audiences, which in turn will hopefully help more women feel less alone. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.